This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
In the evening. You are with Lynn and Kelvin on the evening edition. And as promised, we are going to be continuing our conversation and also continuing to read your messages that have come through on the subject of I really don't know how to describe it. So we've got a resignation. We have got firings. We've got the fired people saying that they resigned. We have political parties withdrawing from the ruling coalition. So in the midst of all of this is just basically politics in Malaysia. I don't know one easy way to sum up what it is that we're talking about.
If I had to, maybe I'd stick to two letters, which is P and M, political maneuverings and prime ministers.
Yeah, that works. So that's what we're talking about today. And we've been asking you for your thoughts. On that subject, we have this message here from Maggie.
I believe we shouldn't be ostriches burying our heads in the sand and hoping that problems will go away. We should pay close attention and observe all the actors and actions. Be prepared to make right decisions for a better Malaysia. We tend to run away from difficulties only to find ourselves facing them again. What we should do is take lessons from what's happening and come up with solutions.
You know, that I think leads to something that I've always thought or worried about, which is the word tolerance and how much it makes its way into our national discourse. Because I think that's related to how willing we are to have difficult conversations. I feel as if anytime we sail a little too close to the wind, when we open up on matters that I think make us nervous or whatever, they recur, right? That's the reason why we keep having the same conversations over and over again. And it's because we always settle on, it's fine, we'll just tolerate one another. But tolerance doesn't always come with true understanding.
Yeah.
And I think to Maggie's point about just observing things, but also being willing to face up to difficulties, that is pretty much the test that we find ourselves in now.
Yeah, I think so. And, you know, we do locally see perhaps very small movements trying to create discussions, trying to create groups where they say, well, this is a safe space for you to bring up topics. You know, if your views are not necessarily kosher, bring them up, we'll talk about them and move along with them. And I think it might actually have to do with the fact that in schools, we don't really learn how to have those conversations. We don't really have the space to critically think and question a lot of things. And that's why when you don't have the answer to, when a teacher or whatever doesn't quite have an answer to something, the common response is to say, well, just don't think about it. Just move on.
Saidi, on that note about, you know, kind of observing actors and actions, says, I've totally miscalculated Tan Sri Muhyiddin Yassin, who led Bersatu leaving Pakatan Harapan, potentially for a backdoor government after, you know, so much talk about integrity and good governance. Yes, I do agree that people can now know better who should lead them, which is also a message that's come through from Dr. RK.
Enact an anti-hopping law to root out ambitious and amphibious politicians who have no qualms of jumping party for personal gain, since we now know who they are.
Yeah, so that's true, right? If there's one thing that this has shown, it's everybody's cards, or at least I think soon enough everybody's cards. For now, all we're seeing are, as we said earlier, meetings, you know, rather opaque meetings with press conferences after, and we just take what we can get from them. But eventually actions will show out. And I think once tomorrow, I'm actually pretty optimistic that we're going to see a little bit more clarity.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think the silver lining for me in this case is that the actors or those who would eventually play this card have already did. And we're only 2 years into the administration. It is... It would be a bit more worrisome had they come along further down in the line. I think this is, you know, I don't know if it's necessarily a silver lining, but I'm hoping that it is, to have a sense of optimism of what's going on.
And then we have this from Eugene saying, during the last election, I had a dream that Malaysian politics would realign into ideology, not race-based parties. I guess Bersatu breaking off was inevitable as Malaysian politics starts realigning. Who's up for a green party in Malaysia?
Well, I think some people here would be, based on the amount of and the gaining concerns that we have about the environment.
Yeah, and also I think, you know, having it said in the name, you know, that this is not going to be a race-based party, which also aligns to this from Azhar Hafiz, who says, "We're all tired of the dinosaurs. This is about the perfect time for a new party by the youth, a true multiracial and genuine one." So I do think there is this hunger for political parties that will move beyond what we've traditionally thought them to be, which is very simply, you know, looking out for one another on the basis of race as opposed to any other form.
Yeah, and perhaps the system that we've been in with such old parties, legacy ones, even the new ones who have been started are more or less still linked to much older figures. So yeah, perhaps with that hunger that we do, where we do right now want a different force, a more middle force, it's more or less the right time.
So on that note, on the line with us, we have Ame Farid, Director of Strategy at KRA Group. Ame, thank you so much for taking the time to join us.
Hi, you're
welcome. Hi. Hi. So, you know, we've been asking everybody this first question because I think it's a good, a reasonable setup because so much has happened. What are your impressions of all the developments that we've seen taking place today?
It's really unprecedented, very fast-paced. And as you know, if you don't refresh, you don't pick up a call or don't refresh your Twitter feed or news feed, you'll be missing out on the latest development. So it is, it's been very fast-paced and, again, as I said, unprecedented. You have the Prime Minister resigning. You have a key member of the coalition pulling out of the coalition and hence with it evaporating the government's majority. And this is something that we've never seen before in the history of the Malaysian political history.
What do you think pushed Tun M to resign so unexpectedly? Is it only because he doesn't want to work with UMNO?
Yes, I think as I've been talking to several sources, the deal that broke the camel's back was, in fact, working the idea of Tun M working with UMNO wholesale. Yeah. Tun M has, as we all know, always been consistent on this in his stand that individuals, especially those without corruption allegations and court issues, are welcome to support him or join his then party, the Satu, or his align with him. I think the idea of working wholesale with UMNO served as that last straw. Especially in the case of working together with former Prime Minister Najib Razak and other senior UMNO leaders who have been charged in court.
Now, another key player in all of this, of course, is Azmin Ali. Do you see the Azmin bloc or camp, I suppose, successfully forming any sort of new government with fresh allies?
Well, there is a lot of horse trading going on as we speak. The race to the magical number 112 is still, in my opinion, at least it is wide open at this stage. If the Azmin camp can pull it off, however, I see that the pecking order of this new coalition that he is putting together is rather uncertain. We must not forget that these parties that he's putting together were foes not too long ago. Yeah. And Malay parties historically have found it difficult to remain aligned for a sustainable period of time.
Would parties then like GPS and Warisan benefit from being a part of this sort of coalition?
Well, for the Sabah and Sarawak parties, they will try to extract as much as they could from the current deal-making that is going around town. Of course, for Sabah and Sarawak parties, greater autonomy, I think, would be one major area of discussion. For Sarawak, GPS, the state government that is led by GPS, as we know, is likely to call for state elections later this year. Therefore, issues like what they've been fighting for, higher oil royalty payment, I think would be a major negotiating point. And according to some of my sources as well, autonomy is a big issue, and of course more budget allocation from Putrajaya if whoever who gets to form government in Putrajaya.
And while we're talking about this issue of, I suppose, different states wanting different things, let's talk about the state governments as well. So what's going to happen, considering that we've seen Bersatu leaving Pakatan Harapan, of course, we've also seen some uncertainty over the status of the cabinet itself. How does that trickle from federal down to state?
So yes, when the alignment in federal is very unclear, it will have a spillover effect onto a state level government. And at this point, it is very difficult to, given the current the development which is still unfolding, it's very difficult to see which side who is now aligned. It is no longer clear between a PH state or an opposition state. So of course, in states like Kedah, Perak, potentially Melaka Negeri Sembilan, these are the majorities are slim that is held by PH. When if there's a change in hand, a change of alignment at the federal level, we might also see changes in state government. But I think that is in the second phase we're looking at. If there are at all any of these changes at the federal level, that would be the first consideration. And then later on, we will have to look at the state alignment as well.
How would a majority Malay coalition in government reshape some of the policies that the Pakatan Harapan government instituted?
Well, I think there will be sort of a return to more patronage, status-driven methods of governance of the past. Same old type of BN-era policies. Of course, I think the reformist zeal will also be much weaker. Outwardly, at least, I think they will try and adopt investor-friendly language, but it's unclear how much traction they would get given their ideological differences and controversial circumstances behind the formation of such a government. The legitimacy issue will definitely be one of the major issues there. And of course, the wait-and-see attitude of Malaysia's business community will likely continue as they wait await such a government articulating their actual policies. Certainly, if this new alignment happens, it will be very clearly pro one particular race, and this will be a bit difficult in terms of managing economic dynamics moving forward.
So a couple of things that I suppose analysts and commentators have pointed out that we wanted your opinion on. Firstly, commentators have said that political parties in Sabah and Sarawak will be kingmakers in this. What are your thoughts on that?
Definitely, because as you look at them, the numbers, the number of seats that they hold are very important, and their political alignment is less clear than that of the peninsula parties. And of course, like I pointed out just now, Sarawak is going for a state election. Therefore, they have a certain set of issues that they want to get assurances of from whoever their new partners would be. So in this position, they would clearly be seen as the kingmakers. And all sides that want to form government in Putrajaya will need Sabah and Sarawak support.
We've also heard analysts say that there is a sizable number of the Malay electorate and political elite who aren't interested in having Dato' Sri Anwar Ibrahim as Prime Minister. What is the main reason for this?
Well, in my observation, I think the years of Anwar bashing on the Malay ground the bashing on the Malay ground by parties like UMNO has severely impacted and negatively shaped the Malay perceptions of Dato' Sri Anwar Ibrahim. Moreover, conservative Malays will always remain suspicious of his more multiracial vision for Malaysia. After all, Dato' Sri Anwar is the leader of a multiracial party, the PKR. But let us not forget that he is a seasoned political player who has had a very colourful history, and with his comes baggage with most of the Malaysian political elite.
With that said, then, is Azmin Ali a viable candidate to either not just to replace Tun Mahathir as Prime Minister, but also to take this position of power in the sense of being next in line, so to speak?
Well, I would think that if he can command the majority of MPs and therefore and also lead a coalition of parties to a victory in general election, then he, of course, more than qualified to be a candidate to be considered. But of course, in terms of public life, he's been an opposition politician for a while, MP since 1999, if I'm not mistaken. But his administrative record is short. The track, he was Menteri Besar of Selangor for a couple of years, and then now as Minister of Economic Affairs for less than 2 years. So it still remains to be seen whether Dato' Sri Azmin can command that level of support and respect from the wider Malaysian electorate. And we have to also remember that he, despite being a PKR senior party, formerly PKR senior party leader and one of its founders, in terms of Malaysian political, in the Malaysian political context, as a national leader, I think his track record is still, has a very short stint as a public servant in that space.
We have an update here which said from the Malaysian Insight, which says that the Agong has accepted Tun Mahathir's resignation. So what do you think happens next?
Well, I think with the resignation, we will have to see. This is, we are going to the constitutional realm, whether there is a need to appoint an acting prime minister, or we go and whoever now raised, as I said, to the 112 magical number to form the next government, or if not, probably a fresh mandate is something that is one of the alternatives for sure.
Amir, thank you so much for joining us today.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me.
You just heard there Amir Farid, Director of Strategy at KRA Group. And also just a quick kind of update on the update, because just as it has been reported that the Yang di-Pertuan Agong has accepted Tun Dr. Mahathir's resignation, it's also been said that he's been appointed as the interim prime minister by the Agong. So there we find ourselves. We're going to be back to continue reading your messages after this. Keep it here on the Evening Edition, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my, BFM 89.9, the business station.